Thanks for listening to The Drive on Demand. Before D-Mac starts whining about Mike Evans again, let me ask you, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.
Training Camp 2020 Locked and Loaded is presented by Fitness Gallery. Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents six. The Drive with the Top 6 at 6.
How about 6? 6 is good.
I got a great tweet. Story number one. This is from KB Maui. Watching the Avs game here on Maui. Hashtag go Avs go. Hashtag SportsNATO.
Yeah.
Oh, that is awesome.
It's all the way out in Maui.
That is great. You can watch the game in Maui. We can't watch it here.
So good for you.
Oh, no, that's awesome. Tyler, so in this SportsNATO, what has been so far your favorite moment, or you expect to be your favorite moment?
Well, the most exciting right now has got to be Michael Porter Jr. Seeing him explode back-to-back games, 30-plus points, at double-digit rebounds in both of those games as well.
Set a Nuggets rookie record for most points in back-to-back games.
Amazing.
Beat the record previously held by Carmelo and Dikembe Mutombo.
Well, he's more, and apparently that is enough that we want to just go ahead and ring it.
Ring it, Kevin.
D-Back, have you seen this schedule for what the Broncos are going through? It's a little bit unusual. I wasn't entirely sure how this is all going to unfold, but here's the way it's going to go from now through August 17th. August 12th through 13th, you're going to have vets in phase two ramp up. So that's going to be helmets. They'll be out there on the field, the entire team. But the rookies are going to be having a separate practice, which I was not aware they were going to be doing that. Apparently, they're going to try to replicate some sort of rookie mini camp for some reason.
Okay.
August 14th, you're going to have your first full team ramp up practice. So they'll be in helmet and shells. It'll be like an OTA practice.
By the way, I found out today. Now, it's going to rotate with everybody here at the station, but I get to be the first fan host to be able to watch practice.
Good and for you, man. I'm glad. Well, I'm glad you're going to be there.
But when I was laughing with Richie off the air, it's like, okay, I get to be the first one, but what are you really going to see? What's really going to be happening on day one of training camp on August 14th?
Well, on August 14th, it's actually a pretty big day. That's the very first full team practice. They'll be in shells and they'll be in helmets, so it's not going to be fully padded, but that's the first time that everybody will be together. So that's actually a big day.
Okay. All right, cool.
The first fully padded practice isn't until August 17th.
Yeah,
so still 12 days away from that. That's the big, like, hello, here we go. We got football. Why do you think they're doing like separated practices with the rookies? That's kind of weird.
I guess I don't know. I thought it was like just. Well, that doesn't make sense. I thought it was like just keeping people apart. I who knows?
Maybe.
It got me.
Hey, congrats on being the first.
I'm gonna get through that, Mister.
Yeah. I don't think you will, but that would be cool if you did.
When I come back, you're going to call me Mr. Mister.
Hey, Mister. Are you still the same Mister?
Kyrie Eleison. Ring it, Kevin. Coach Fangio, about Bryce Callahan. Go ahead, Kevin. Play that, please.
Bryce's health is good. A week or 10 days before we came back here, he got sick, not COVID sick. He had a stomach virus and he lost some weight. So we got to get that back on him. But his foot right now is fine. No problems. We are going to work him at both spots. He'll play corner and inside at nickel, along with obviously a bunch of other people at both positions. And we'll see how it unfolds by the time we line up against Tennessee. But he's going to work both spots.
I like, him saying positive things about Bryce Callahan. I hope that is indeed the case. It was all good with Bryce Callahan until that scrimmage last year, kind of around this time. But when he says, a bunch of other people or something like that?
He's going to be playing both spots, kind of competing with a bunch of other guys.
Are we really that up in the air at corner?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. We've been talking about this, man. I mean, you've got AJ Boye, who is your number one corner.
Okay.
A guy that probably is not a number one corner right now. You've got, who is your number two? Who's your number two?
Bryce Callahan?
Michael Ojemudia?
Isaac Yiadom?
No.
Bosby?
Maybe.
Some dude they picked, Logan Ryan?
Crazy. It's crazy to think, though, that on the NFL's highest paid defense, no team has got more money invested in their defense than we do. We don't really know who our number two corner is. That's crazy.
It is kind of crazy. All right, just for fun, give me your, you're a nickel. You're a nickel. What's your secondary?
Well, you're going to have all your starters out there, and who's my starter? I don't know who my starter
is. What is your secondary and nickel?
I'm hoping that Bryce Callahan is your starter.
Okay, so, fine. Give me your entire.
Michael Ojemudia.
Inside or outside?
I don't know.
So, Boye, Ojemudia, Callahan.
Yeah.
Okay. You sure?
No, I'm not entirely sure. I think that was the whole point of, like, the story.
Ring it, Kevin.
Hey, sort of getting lost in the shuffle of all this COVID news and, you know, different conferences coming back at different times in college. There's a movement going on, and players of the Big Ten have now joined players of the Pac-12 and uniting against the idea of college football season unless certain demands are met. And these demands, they include getting paid. They include certain requirements with COVID-19. How much power do you think that this movement is going to gain? Do you think that this could be a defining moment for players in college where they could finally unite and really become as powerful as they could be?
I don't even really fully
understand what the movement is. I don't know if you do, D-Mac, but there's a lot of social justice stuff going on into it. Well, go ahead.
Well, I thought it was mostly about safety precautions because of COVID. Are you telling me
there's money involved? They want to be paid. I know for the Pac-12 players that they want to be paid.
That is amazing that is even. How did that even start? How did it happen? It's pretty incredible. I really don't know. But the story out of Washington State where, you know, hey, it's okay if you opt out because of COVID, but not if you join a union, basically.
Okay, so here's some of it. Richie just pointed out they want to allow students to opt out during the pandemic without losing their eligibility or spot on the team. Okay. They want to create a task force to address social injustice issues. Uh-huh. They want to direct 2% of conference revenue to support financial aid for low-income Black students.
Wow. My goodness. Fascinating that this is even happening. Really interesting.
Yeah, there's a little bit more, but it'll be interesting to see how much they can actually rally together. If they could, dude, they got power. They just don't know it. They just don't know how to unite.
Well, college players have always had power. It's just that it's such a short period of time. The thought of organizing it and missing time or risking. This is why I have so much respect for Jeremy Bloom, by the way. And I've said this a million times. Because he was willing to go out on the limb, and it did cost him 2 years of playing college football. It just seems so unlikely to me that college kids would be willing to forego that opportunity. I mean, it's just so hard to get there in the first place, Tyler, and to risk giving that up. I'm amazed that this is happening, period. I have no idea where this is going to go because I can't believe it exists.
Well, it took a moment like this where the world was just flipped upside down to even get to it.
All right, ring it, Kevin. Dude, I do not know if you've caught this story, but one of the most remarkable stories in sports is happening in the WNBA. Players for the Atlanta Dream. Now, the Atlanta Dream's co-owner is Senator Kelly Loeffler, Republican of Georgia, who is in a tightly contested race for her seat, and she has spoken disparagingly of the Black Lives Matter movement. She is a co-owner of the team. The Atlanta Dream team, who is owned by Kelly Loeffler, wore t-shirts endorsing her opponent, Dr. Raphael G. Warnock. Are you following me on this? The players on the team are endorsing the opponent of the owner of their team. Wow. What's your take on that?
Wild. I'm not sure what my take is. That's a crazy situation. I mean, wow.
Wow. I mean,
can you imagine going against your employer?
No. Think about that just for a second as you're listening to us. Whether you like your, say you don't like your employer. Because, I mean, you know, they got an issue.
But you like a paycheck.
Right. Are you going to show up at work with a t-shirt that basically goes against, directly against something you know is important to the to your owner? It's a strong move. It's just an amazing story.
Right.
And, you know, I got to hand it to the WNBA. The WNBA players, they are in lockstep with so many things. They've been very strong together. And they don't make that much money, Tyler. They don't have some sort. They're not even close to what was going on in the NBA. So the risk that they're running is way higher than, like, the NBA guys. But they're willing to do that.
Yeah, that's a crazy story, man. Really crazy.
It's amazing. Ring it, Kevin.
Hey, I'm a little bit surprised to hear that more teams are not doing what the Saints are doing. And they've pretty much created their own bubble. Sean Payton said it's not a bubble, it's a sequester. They've got a team hotel in New Orleans that they've rented out the entire hotel. And the tier one people in that organization can voluntarily stay at this hotel.
Yeah.
So most of the team's 100 tier one and tier two employees are going to be staying in this luxury hotel until opening day. A lot of teams have got guys staying in hotels regardless during training camp. But why is every team not creating their own little bubble environment in their team hotel, at least during training camp, where guys are naturally there regardless?
Yeah, that's a good point. Do you think the NFL will form some sort of bubble before this is all said and done?
I think it would be very wise to have a plan in place for divisional play.
Right.
Now, I don't think you have to go ahead and execute that, but I think you have to plan and have a plan that, man, if all hell breaks loose and you can't finish this season, well, we got to get the most important games
right.
played. And you could do that by bringing the AFC West to one city and
right.
knocking out all those games in
6 weeks.
Yep. So you don't even have to ask the players to stay in a hotel very long, to stay in a bubble very long. 6 weeks.
That's frankly, doable. You could do that, and then you could maybe go to another bubble city.
Now, maybe you could expand that to, like, all of your AFC games.
I was just going to say, what if you just did that? And maybe not
all. How many games is that? That 10?
Well, that'd be 15, I suppose, but if you just played everybody in the AFC, or do you mean?
Oh, no, I just meant, like, whoever's on your schedule.
Oh, right. Well, that'd be 12, right? Because you'd have your four non-conference games. So 12. Yeah, you can do that, right? You play. There you go.
You got to have something in place in case all hell breaks loose.
Let me ask you this to what you're asking me. Should they consider throwing away the schedule completely and just redoing it and consider this sort of bubble movement that you probably could and start the season a little bit later?
I don't think they have to do that right now, but they should have that plan
as
in
plan,
place.
Yeah.
Like, what is the plan? You know, right now you're trying to get it all in. You're not trying to give up anything. You're trying to get every last dollar you possibly can.
You think they're being greedy?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I want them to play all the games, don't you?
Of course, yes.
That's what we all
but
want.
We've had this conversation now with Chas in high school. Isn't a limited schedule better than nothing?
Sure.
7 football games in high school, 10 games in the Pac-12. Is it better than nothing?
Well, they got to have some emergency plan in place that they just haven't told us about, right?
That's assuming a lot. Ring it, Kevin. Wrap it up. Oh, what is going on? We have a Sportsnado update. Tyler, at 17:30. Vladislav Zemsinikov. Maybe. From Mikko Rantanen and Nathan MacKinnon. 3-0 Avalanche.
Let's go. Let's go.
As we are seconds away from getting into the second intermission. 3-0 Avalanche over the Dallas Stars. It's a Sportsnado where the Nuggets have already won and Michael Porter Jr. is breaking records. The Avalanche are killing the Stars.
Goals, you guys.
Goals by Makar, Donskoy, and Zemsinikov.
I think you did great.
thought I got close. Way to go.
Nemistikov.
I'm sorry, what?
Nemistikov.
Nemistikov? You're trying to show off?
Yeah.
We have Chad Brown with us on the Fireball Hotline. Hi, Chad. How are you?
I'm fantastic, fellas. How are you guys doing?
We got yelled at by Nate Jackson. In fact, he wrote a column yelling at us about our take on Juwan James.
Well, mostly D-Mac.
Me by name, but just saying we were ridiculous and over the top and this was absurd and that the Juwan James was really talking about the collective media, not Vic Fangio's comments and, man, collective moaning by the air staff. And you can read that at 1043thefan.com. But you reached out to me. You've got kind of a different take on it.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had a chance to read Nate's article, and, you know, Nate's a sharp guy, so maybe he makes some fantastic points. But I felt as if Juwan James was clearly responding to Vic Fangio, and in some ways, justifiably so. It's never going to be good when a coach calls a player out publicly. You know, you can talk about guys in the meeting room. You can talk about them in the team rooms. I mean, there's lots of ways a coach can coach up a guy, get on a guy, ride a guy, try to inspire a guy, give a guy a hard time. There's lots of ways to do that. But to do it publicly is never a good thing. And so it ends up becoming a situation that we have now where Juwan James goes out publicly and snipes back at his coach. So Vic Fangio sniped at him. Juwan James snipes back. The only question becomes, who's going to play the next card, and what card is that going to be?
So, Chad, you think Coach Fangio made a mistake? Going back to last season, was it a mistake day one when he started talking about whether Juwan James was mentally tough enough to play?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Whether you, as a coach and an entire team, an entire locker room, feels that way or not, taking it public doesn't help the situation. It only creates animosity between the two sides. The most successful coaches I've been around, guys like a Pete Carroll, guys like a Bill Belichick, you would have to hunt and go very far to try to find them saying something negative publicly about a player. They may say it with their actions. They may not give a guy a contract extension. You know, the Patriots let Tom Brady go. All those kind of things are going to happen. But find me a circumstance where a guy like Pete Carroll, a guy like Bill Belichick has questioned a player's heart publicly. Essentially, you know, called him a name I can't say on air because he questioned his football character. He questioned his football heart. In my opinion, that's just something that doesn't play well in the locker room, and it doesn't play well personally to the player on the receiving end of that.
Does it matter?
Does it matter? It does matter.
Why?
Does matter. There, because the way a head coach treats players in those circumstances, the rest of the locker room does take notice. I've given a detailed history of my 15th season with the New England Patriots, my last year in the league, and how many times I was released and brought back, and how the formality of the process was lost by the third time that I was released. Bill Belichick cut me as he was putting grapes in his mouth in the dining hall. So it could not have been a more unprofessional environment. But, you know, later that night, you know, Teddy Bruschi came over to my house and was like, man, this is messed up, because if he treats you like this, this is what he's going to do to me. All the linebackers we have in that linebacker room, except for a couple of rookies, are guys who are, you know, in a similar situation to you. We're all 10 years plus. You know, Junior Seau was in year 17 by that point. I think Teddy was in year 11 or 12. Mike Vrabel was in 12 or 13. Rosie Colvin was in year 12 or 13. So all those guys, recognizing how I was treated, forced them to look at themselves. And then what is it going to be like for me? And that undermines the authority. It undermines the confidence in the head coach. All of those kind of things are, you know, creep into the locker room and then creep into each individual player's psyche, depending on what position he is on the team.
So, Chad, I would agree with you. I think it was a mistake that Fangio did it, because the second he did it, you've basically given up on the player forever. And I'm not quite sure how you bounce back from it. But I would disagree just a little bit, I guess, on whether it matters. Like, I guess, see, what do you think that his teammates were thinking about Juwan James? You know, what if they agreed?
That's fine. You can agree, and you can say that guy did not invest the same way that I invested as a player. But at no point does going public make the situation better.
Yeah, I got you.
We all agree that Juwan James, you know, did not give to his teammates what they were looking for. And, you know, there's certainly an aspect of this conversation that needs to be talked about with Juwan James about whether, right or wrong, there is a perception about him coming from Miami and definitely these first 2 years here in Denver about his football character. And I think, you know, Tyler, as a guy who played a long time in the league, as you did, and a guy who played a long time like I did, we know that our football character is what speaks for us when we're injured, when maybe we're sick. You know, I missed a few games due to illness during my career. I would hate for any of my teammates to ever think for even a half of a second that I was not as invested in them, that I didn't take the game seriously, that I was not willing to lay it on the line. Yes, I may miss this game because I am at home with a 104 flu, and I cannot play. The doctors will not let me play. But no one wants to question, no one should question my football character. Juwan James, through things he did in Miami, through things he's done here in Denver, has left that door open. So while we can all maybe have doubts about Juwan James's football character, that just because he did it wrong doesn't make Vic Fangio's going public with it a right. Those two don't necessarily need to add up together. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right, couple quick hitters. If you were a high school senior and you'd already committed to CU, as you did, I'm going to guess, before your senior year, would you play in a high school football season that started in March?
Man, yeah, you know, I've actually talked to a few college kids who have reached out to me about saying whether they should play their final season.
Mm-hmm.
And they're asking me to reach out to scouts and people that I know in the NFL to say, what's the best move for me to make here? Do I play if my season is delayed? Do I just, you know, keep training for whatever combine or workouts may come? So to answer your question, D-Mac, if I was a high school senior, as much as I, you know, get on the airwaves of the fan and talk about love of the game and talk about this and talk about that, man, you know, I've also talked about, you and I, we've talked about, do you just let this season go and focus on what's coming next for you? So that would be a very difficult decision for me.
What would you do? Chad, don't dance around it. What would you do?
It would come down to possibly the potential success of my team. Do we have a chance to win the state title? Do I have a chance to be All-State and All-American and all those kinds of things? Or are we going to end the season 2-8? And, you know, I've got no chance to, you know, not even make All-League. All those kind of things would factor into it. As much as I love the game, you know, the love of the game would have to be put aside to try to make a practical decision to what would be the best for me and my situation.
All right, Chadwick, always great to hear from you. We'll talk to you later.
Appreciate you, buddy.
And
all right, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
That's Chad Brown on the Fireball Hotline, offering a different opinion than Nate Jackson.
Players are no different than media.
That's right.
You got various opinions within a locker room.
Peter King was with us. If you missed that, that was great. Our sports NATO has been a blast so far today because everybody's winning. The Avs are up 3-0 into the third period. The Nuggets won. The Rockies are rolling. And, man, this is the place to talk about it. Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Does your company make safety a top priority? Alliance Safety, Colorado's premier supplier of safety equipment, is here to help make it one. As an authorized distributor of 3M safety products and home to all pro gear, Alliance has a vast inventory of personal protective equipment designed to keep your workers safe, including fall protection, safety glasses, protective gloves, and gas detection solutions. Visit AllianceSafetyInc.net. Call 303-388-8766 or stop by the Alliance Safety Warehouse off I-70 and Tower today to lock up all your safety needs.
Training Camp 2020 Locked and Loaded is presented by FastSellGuarantee.com. Here's The Drive with Tyler Columbus and D-Mac.
Tyler, here we are. It's the Sportsnado 2020.
Yes.
We are in the middle of it with the Avs, Nuggets, Rockies. Rockies about to get going. So maybe I'll go there with the Rockies. Are you paying attention to my Rockies.
Dude, of course I'm paying attention. I mean, it's been great to see Nolan Arenado get a couple homers the last couple nights, huh? Back-to-back nights.
Yeah.
So he hasn't done a whole lot else. But
walk me through the process with your family at home when it comes to the Rockies.
Oh, yeah, there's not a major process. This is mainly a Tyler thing. This is mainly
a Tyler thing.
You know what's funny? My wife, when we first started dating, she was all about baseball. Because, you know, when I go visit her parents back east, it's Groundhog's Day every single day. You just walk into the living room and they're watching the Red Sox.
Yeah, all day,
every single day. That's what she used to be like, but now for whatever reason she can't sit down and watch a whole baseball game. Either can I, but I'll put it on in the background.
Yeah, we put it on. We have a couple TVs in the house, and the worst TV, we don't keep a TV in the living room, but we have a small TV in the kitchen, and the kitchen's like right next to the living room.
The living room?
We do not have a TV in
like
the living
family
room.
Like, what do you mean by living room? Is it family room?
No, because the family room's really down in the basement.
The family room is not in the basement. Nobody has ever had a family room in the basement.
We kind of just have a flat-out, like, living room.
Okay.
Like, couple couches and a...
And a piano.
The piano's in the music room.
What?
Yeah.
Dude, how big is your house? How many rooms do you got?
It's really not that big, but I'm making it sound kind of enormous.
All right.
So anyways, we have this tiny little TV in the kitchen, and it's always on. And she's, you know, making dinner, and we're eating dinner. And usually in the summer times, you know, we do have a dining room.
We got the dining room, we got the living room, we got the family room, we got the music room.
Right.
Okay.
Right. That sounds ridiculous.
Where does the butler live?
The butler lives in the guest house.
Duh. Oh, okay. Yeah.
But the TV stinks to watch. And it's just like, she just wants to like watch the game sort of there. And I'm like, because I don't want to like, because she will watch the game, but she wants to watch it on her own terms.
Okay.
And it's always the awkward moment where you just sort of diverge from your significant under while watching.
You know what?
I think this would be best
if I went to the basement. I think it's going to be best for everybody if I just go to the basement. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. But I kind of want the rest of the family to watch the game with me.
Yeah.
But I can't convince them to go anywhere else.
Well, I mean, that's a tough situation. You got to get a family room. You need a bigger house. If you had a family room, you would all sit there.
We try. I don't even... So wait, what do you define as a family room then?
I define the family room as...
What's a family room?
The room with the couch and the TV. That's the family room.
Okay, because I don't have a...
You don't have a couch?
No, I got the couch. I don't have a TV in that room that you would consider the family
room. Oh, so that's a useless room. That's what I call that room. That's the total useless room. Like, nobody needs that room anymore.
Oh, my God.
What's the point of that room? You don't go sit in there and talk to your wife. No, you don't do that.
I swear to God. I swear to God.
Well, good for you.
We put on the music or the radio or whatever, and we just read and chat. Hey,
you want to go talk?
But I can't. My 18-year-old, 18 tomorrow, I'll go to him. Hey, you want to come down and watch the game?
Hey, you want to go to the family room and talk, 18-year-old?
He's like, no! I can't even convince him to, like, watch the end of... I don't know. He watches it kind of on his own. I don't even know how he does it. I don't even know. He seems to know everything that's going on.
Devices.
Right. There's a variety of devices that he just catches up on.
Correct.
Yeah, he cannot wait to leave. Holy cow. It's just going to be...
It's getting close, dude.
Oh, dude. A week and a half.
18 tomorrow, huh?
18 tomorrow.
All right. Congratulations.
Tomorrow. Appreciate it. And I was tooling around in Greeley today. He doesn't listen, so I'm not spoiling anything.
I love when he texts you in the middle of the show. Hey, Dad, are you working today?
Yeah, what's going on?
Yeah. What are you doing right now?
I'm on the radio, dude. Like I have been at this time for the past 11 years.
Where have I been for like your entire life?
Yeah, since you were 9, or I'm sorry, 11. Since you were 7 years old, this time of day, I've been doing the same exact thing. Since you were 7.
Yeah, that's crazy to think about. That's what my kid's age is right now. Maybe I'll be sitting here in 11 years talking about that.
That's it. Maybe I'll be drooling in the corner over there saying, I remember when
right.
you were great.
Right.
But, you know, it is an interesting thing to how you consume sports with your family, right? But let me tell you, at 18, so he's close to becoming a college athlete. I was thinking of you. I was listening to Orlando this morning. And this CSU thing, and we'll see where it all goes. But Orlando told a story this morning about how they would have lightning warnings at the University of Miami.
Right.
Lightning, and the coaches on a practice field turned off the horn. So they changed the practices to
I shouldn't laugh, but I could totally picture it.
Yeah. They changed the practices to early in the morning.
Right.
And in the case that Orlando's great with these stories, in case there was lightning, because it's Miami, it could happen at any time, right? They turned off the horn. So Orlando said he could hear like a horn like in the distance.
On the other side of campus?
On the other side of campus. And then he'd look up at the horn near their field.
Hey,
nothing.
Carry on. We got 7-on-7 next, guys.
So let me ask you this, in light of the CSU thing and some other things going on.
So you want me to spill some dirt on my teams?
If you're comfortable with it, if it was something like how did college coaches in general treat their players?
You know, I didn't necessarily have any experiences like that. I did have like a near-death experience, actually, come to think about
what?
It. Dude, I'm not even kidding you. This is a little bit of a bad story, dude. So I was in college. I had a total labrum replacement on my left shoulder.
And, how old?
I was my sophomore year, I think.
Oh, man. Scary.
No, junior year.
Like, this is it for football? Like, I'm a little nervous about it?
Well, no, I wasn't thinking about that. But, it was a big surgery, and I was going to be out for a long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had one of those, like, blocks in my arm, and I couldn't move my arm and everything. And so, anyways, I've got this surgery. I've had my arm in this sling for a little over a month or something, and I can't breathe. I can't take a deep breath. And every time I take a deep breath, my back is hurting. My lungs are hurting. I seriously I can't breathe. And so I go into the trainer and I'm like, hey, man, something's wrong. Like, I don't feel good. I can't take a deep breath.
Wow. Now that's scary.
Yeah. And so the trainer's like, oh, well, you probably got a lower back sprain. And I'm like, I don't think so, man. So he puts like some stim and ice on it. And I'm like, nope. Doesn't feel any better.
Oh, man.
So it's like, all right, go down in the sauna. Hit up the sauna. See how you feel after that.
What about going to the emergency room?
Yeah, well, so I go down in the sauna. So then I'm like, dude, it still doesn't feel good. He's like, well, when you get home, just take a hot shower or something.
Jeez, you gotta be kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you. So that night, it was getting worse and worse. And I'm a football player, you know, and so it takes a lot for me to really go into the trainer and say something's wrong. And that night, about 12 in the morning, I called up my wife. She was my girlfriend at the time. And I was like, hey, you got to get over here. Like,
wow.
you got to take me to the ER.
And wow.
So I went to the ER. And I just bypassed the team, and I just went to the ER because I felt like I wasn't necessarily getting the treatment that I needed. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, they do some scans, and the doctor comes back, and he's like, we're admitting you to the hospital. You have hundreds of blood clots in your lungs.
Whoa.
And had you come maybe an hour later, the next stop would have been your heart. And,
I'm like,
you got to be kidding me. Like, what are you talking about? I have blood clots. So then it was a terrifying experience because for a week, I had to do a bunch of testing, and we had to find out, was this a genetic deal or was this because of the surgery? And if it was genetic, well, I wouldn't be able to play football the rest of my life because I would have had to be on a Coumadin for the rest of my life.
Wow.
Found out after a few days of testing and everything that it was because of my surgery and there was no genetics, but that was the craziest deal I ever had in college. And you know, the coaches, everybody, they showed up and they treated me like royalty after that. Anytime I had a hangnail, it was pretty serious.
So if you were advising, now we saw quite a few of these players defend the program, and obviously there's others that are not doing the same, although we don't know anybody's name. What advice would you give these kids when it comes to their health?
Well, it's a tough line to walk, man. I mean, I've got regrets over the course of my NFL career of not reporting all my injuries. I've got a binder full of injuries that were reported, and then I could have had three more binders of stuff had I actually reported it. And every year, I was terrified to go in and tell the team, hey, man, my back hurts. Like, there's something wrong here because I was always a bubble guy and I was always afraid of getting cut. And I didn't want to give them any extra ammunition, a reason to find somebody else to do my job.
Probably so, like most college kids.
Yeah,
probably like
yeah.
Most
I mean, I'm referring mostly to the NFL right now. But and now hindsight 2020, I really regret it because you retire and you file all your paperwork trying to get some money for your injuries and you know make sure that you can get covered on those injuries the rest of your life. And I had to fight a bunch of them that I didn't really have proper paperwork on. And I don't know. I look back on it and I don't necessarily regret it because I knew that the reality is you give them anything and it might be the end. Mm-hmm. So I don't necessarily regret it, but I empathize with players that are going through a situation. So what I would tell guys is when it comes down to injuries, now COVID is entirely different. So this has nothing to do with COVID, what I'm talking about here. But, you know, if you've got an injury that is going to affect the way that you play and you're not going to be able to play as good or at least reasonable football as you know you can, well, that's when it's time that you got to step up and you just tell them there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. And you get a second opinion if you have to get a second opinion.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it could apply to COVID, though, too. I mean, if you're really, you know, worried about it.
Yeah. Again, though, I mean, I can relate to what kids are going through with COVID. Like, here's where I'm at on the CSU deal. I don't know any specifics, and so I shouldn't assume too much, but I'm going to make an assumption here, okay? And my assumption is that players were never told directly, verbatim, hey, cover up your symptoms. They were never told, do not disclose your symptoms or else you will lose playing time. But they felt the reality of that.
Okay.
And that probably was a reality. And
so both things could be true at the same time.
Sure.
Like kids could felt intimidated and felt like they, you know, they're being told one thing and other kids could say, what are you talking about?
Well, but I don't think the kids need to be told anything. I think that's just the nature of football. We are terrified individuals. We are terrified of somebody stealing our job. And so that's just the natural pressure that comes with the game. And so I could absolutely see an 18-year-old kid that is got some symptoms and feels like, I don't know, man. I don't know if I want to disclose this because I don't want to go into quarantine for 2 weeks and lose my job.
Yeah, sure enough, I you know wake up this morning and there it is on SportsCenter, and it evolved during our show yesterday to where now there's going to be an investigation into it, and we'll find out, and it'll have to happen, you know, relatively quickly. Well, I tell you what, this was really cool. Earlier in the show, we were talking to Peter King, and nobody has a better grasp on what the NFL has been and likely what it's going to be than Peter King. We are joined by the legendary Peter King, and we are so grateful that you are taking some time to talk to us today, Peter. How are you? Good afternoon.
I'm doing great. How about you guys? How's Denver doing these days?
Well, that's an interesting question, Peter. Surrounding what?
Denver is gorgeous, the city.
Yeah, Denver's great. Well,
yes. Peter, it's great to have you, man. I was reading your most recent piece here, and, you know, the bubble that the Saints have created, having the optional team hotel that all team employees can go stay at, makes a lot of sense. And we're watching NBA go off. Pretty much, I mean, it's been perfect so far. And football clearly cannot create a bubble like that. Do you expect to see more teams come out with a plan like the Saints have?
I would have thought so. But I have not heard of a single one that's doing it like they are. And the reason that I'm a little bit surprised by that is that in the NFL, everybody copies everybody else. But I do think that teams were so far down the road of what exactly they were doing that to change up right now, I think a bunch of teams just didn't really want to do that. So I'm a little surprised, but if a team starts to really, get a significant number of positives, and people are starting to sit out. Who knows? You never know. But the hard thing is I just can't see this happening during the season. I can't see guys voluntarily unless, you know, Sean Payton gave me a good example. I mean, right now, Emmanuel Sanders' family is not with him in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
So all it is for him, because what most teams do, if you're a free agent, and you're just coming to town, and in this particular year, this weird year where free agent would not have come to Denver on May 25th because, you know, there was no, everybody was having to basically either officially or unofficially, you know, steer clear of all these team areas. And so, you know, Emmanuel Sanders just got to New Orleans a week or so ago. So he's staying in a team hotel. So now, instead of the Saints just having everybody stay at sort of a dorm-like Hilton in out near the airport in New Orleans, they're moving them to a really nice, one of the two or three nicest hotels in the city, the Lowe's Hotel, which is right by the French Quarter. And everybody, I hear that all but about 20 players on the team, including some real respected veterans like Mario Davis, they're all going and doing this because they want to give themselves the best chance to win. Now, once the season starts, they're not going to be doing this. At least the plan is not to be doing it. But I don't know. I really happen to think that that at some point this year, this, I'm not saying it's going to be, they're going to be able to force players. They're not going to be able to force players. But I do think at some point this year, teams are going to present this as an option to players and coaches because there's just going to be too many positives.
You know, it's interesting. Emmanuel and his family actually live here year round. And they just like this area and they've just called this a home. So that is interesting to hear that Emmanuel's doing that. That's a sacrifice, big sacrifice, being away from his family. How willing, but Emmanuel's kind of an old school, older guy. How many players do you think would be willing to make that kind of sacrifice?
That's a great question. I happen to think that until or if there's an outbreak on a team, I mean, I'm going to throw a few things out here. I mean, Matthew Stafford is a vital, you know, the most important player on the Detroit Lions. His wife is a cancer survivor. And I believe he's got four children. So Matthew Stafford is going to go home every night after practice. You know, he might not do anything else, but he's going to go home every night. I thought Joe Judge, the coach of the Giants, made a great point when someone was asking him this exact question. And Joe Judge said, you know, I need my family at home. I need them basically to be in a bubble for 6 months because he does. I mean, you know, even, you know, it's hard for, you know, say a wife and family or a girlfriend or whatever to basically just stay at home.
Right.
And not go out. And I'm not suggesting that everybody do that. But what I am suggesting is you, and I saw this because I toured the Vikings training facility 2 weeks ago with their infection control officer, Eric Sugarman. And as I told Sugarman, man, you could eat off the floor in here. It's fantastic. So I'm just telling you, it's not going to be, people are not, players are not going to get, not going to get COVID inside their facility, in my opinion. I think they're going to get it on the outside of the facility.
Yeah,
just look what happened to Eric Sugarman. He got it on the outside of the facility when he, basically went home. You know, he's got two boys. One is a kid who just graduated from high school, and he's married. So, you know, who knows how he got it, but I don't think he got it at the facility. And that is the thing that is going to be really difficult for all these players.
The actual protocol at the facility is pretty amazing. You know, once you get in that building, it's one of the safest places you can be. So one of the riskier parts of the season is just simply travel. How do you think the league is going to handle travel this year? Are they going to restrict it? Or are they going to try to make teams fly in on the same day even potentially?
Well, you know, I originally thought that that is exactly what they were going to do. And in my opinion, if I was an NFL coach and I looked at my schedule at the beginning of the year, I'm telling you, even if I had an early game, if I've got a flight of less than an hour to get to the road game. Like in Denver, that's troublesome. There aren't a lot of short trips. There are probably no short trips from Denver.
Just Kansas City.
But honestly, yeah, Kansas City, you're right.
That's it.
But I would, honestly, my thought is that I would do as many, one-day trips as possible. Because, you know, here's the other interesting thing. They are, the NFL, and all of these rules have not been finalized yet, okay? But the NFL is likely to enforce a rule that would not allow any player to leave the team hotel on the road, and would mandate that no player, has people from the outside into the facility, into the hotel. By that, I mean, you know, you don't invite four or five members of your family to go eat dinner in the lobby. And as one general manager said to me, he said, you know, one of the great joys of what it is that we do is that six or eight of us every Saturday night in whatever city we go to, we go eat a great meal somewhere. And he goes, that's by the board. We're all, he said, I'm probably just going to get room service, or just get something to go from the team meal, in the hotel. So there's a lot of little things that are going to change this year.
Thank you so much, Peter. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
No problem, guys. Have a great day.
You too.
There's Peter King on the Fireball Hotline. You can hear an extended interview that we had with Peter King right now at 1043thefan.com. And real great stuff. Awesome get, by the way. Good job, Richie. Good job, Kevin. My man, Tyler. The Sports NATO keeps rolling. We've got a Nuggets win. We got an Avs win. The Rockies are going right now. Can they top it off on August 5th, 2020, our first Sports NATO of the year? To talk all about it, Jerry Schemmel, along with Nick Ferguson, next right here on The Fan.
Miss any of The Drive? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.